sweat the technique.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line, being joined by the voice of the Houston Astros, Todd Callis. Our conversation presented by Texas Star Grill Shop and Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. Todd, how's the morale? How are the vibes right now around the team?
I think the guys are happy to have a day off and happy to get some sort of change of scenery. It hasn't been great, obviously. I mean, it's been rough. 9-17, or 7-19, rather, is what it is. And it's the second worst record in baseball. And the Astros never could have imagined themselves here. The guys are good, but I've seen them a lot better.
Todd, you look at everything that's played out, and I there's people that are jumping ship left and right, and people writing this team off and closing the door on the golden era and all these different things. As you look at it and you're traveling with the team, we know that you're starting to get some of the cavalry back. You know you're going to get Fromber back and hopefully Javier right after that. Is that enough? Is it the starting pitching, or are you more concerned with all the runners left on base and not getting those timely hits?
Well, there's definitely concerns. You don't get to this point 12 games under after 26 games without things going the wrong way in a lot of different areas. The risky numbers are terrible. They're obvious. They're not hitting with runners in scoring position. The back end of the bullpen, for the leads they've had, have not been able to close it out. That first homestand was kind of a tough way to start the season, where they were tied or had the lead in the sixth inning or later of every game and ended up 2-5 on that homestand. And it hasn't gotten much better since then. Having said all that, you're starting to get your starters back, like you said in your question. That'll improve. So you got Fromber coming back this weekend. JB's made 2 starts. Hopefully, shortly thereafter, we'll see Christian Javier. Maybe sometime there after that, we'll see Jose Urquidy. So pieces are starting to come back healthy. And for the most part, this team is who they were last year. It's the same faces. It's the same dudes. The guys are getting hits. They're just not getting hits at the time you need them. So everything that can go wrong for this team has gone wrong. You can call it snake bit. You can call it whatever you want. This has been a terrible 26-game stretch. And even with all that, the last I saw, Fangraphs had them at a 45% chance to make the playoffs. So I'm okay if people want to jump off the bandwagon, as long as you don't jump back on when things go well. I really appreciate the true diehard fans that stay with this team during the tough times. We've had 7 years of amazing, incredible accomplishments to give up on this team that quickly.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. Well said there, TK. Todd Callis joining us on the HRNP guest line. We talked a little bit about the pitching there with Fromber coming back on Sunday, maybe Javier soon after that, or Urquidy down the pike as well, and then, of course, the big two arms in the summer. The corresponding move with Fromber was J.P. France. Did that surprise you at all?
It did. Yeah, I didn't even notice who was on and off the charter last night, but I assume JP wasn't on the charter. If he was sent down, I was thinking it was going to be Spencer Arrighetti, just because he's been the guy that's filled in, spot started, and then been sent back in the past. So, yeah, that did catch me off guard when I saw that, to be honest with you. And I don't know what the next plan is. So, obviously, there's space for Fromber, but I don't know if they have plans to bring up another reliever and maybe move Arrighetti up, because there's so many off days. You don't need that fifth starter for a while with Blanco going now and then Fromber. Then you've got Hunter Brown and JB on the next homestand. So you won't need that fifth starter for a while. So I'm not sure how it's going to play out. But to answer your question, yes, that was a surprise to me to see JP set out.
TK, we look at first base. We know Abreu is struggling again and scuffling to the utmost. And John Singleton had a couple of hits in Chicago, but they're bringing Cabbage up for the series in Mexico City. We've kicked it around. Do you think that it's a possibility that Dubon starts getting reps at first base? He's been hitting the baseball. He's been reliable, or is he just too valuable as like a Swiss Army knife?
I think you've got to see something change at some point. I think you guys asked me a couple of shows ago, you know, what's the leash? And it's getting to that point now where if you get into May and then mid-May and things aren't changing and there's no signs of things improving, you've got to do something at first base. You just need more production offensively and more solid play defensively than what the Astros have been getting to this point 26 games in. So, yeah, I think you're at the point in the next 15 or 20 games things have to get turned around, or else I think you're going to see major changes, whether that's Kibon, whether it's Yiner getting a couple of starts at first base, whether it's a Cabbage or Joey Loperfido. One of those will probably be the better alternative to what has been going on now if things don't get turned around. So, yeah, Cabbage can do his thing. He's obviously in a spot here where you're in the highest altitude and elevation you'll ever play in a major league game. So if he can hit a couple of balls out and get himself some confidence, maybe he sees himself as the answer. But I think they're going to stay with the Abreu-Singleton combo for at least a few more weeks. But then beyond that, I think they have to get things turned around. You can't go past mid-May without seeing some improvement.
Todd Kalish joining us on the HRMP guest line. We were doing the show during yesterday's game, so we were watching from the corner of our eyes, and we realized that, oh, Joe Espada just got thrown out. What was your vantage point of that ejection? How did you see the build-up, et cetera, et cetera?
It was weird because the home plate umpire, Jansen Viscani, was kind of going at our dugout, and he was the one yelling more than I felt like the Astros dugout was yelling back. Joe was very calm, cool, collected, went out there, had a little say with Jansen, and then got tossed during that conversation. It wasn't very animated. He didn't get up in his face. He was frustrated to the point where he felt like he needed to say something about the balls and strikes. And once you argue balls and strikes, it's an automatic ejection. So, I don't know if Joe did it for purposes of firing up his team. I don't know if he has just reached his boiling point and just couldn't take it anymore. That's what he said in his post-game press conference. But it was kind of an unusual ejection at that point in the ninth inning, or bottom of the eighth, I think, or whatever it was late in that game. But, yeah, it was his first ejection. I'm sure he'll be a little more fiery on future ejections. This one was a little more calm. And the Astros just need to get things turned around, and hopefully for Joe Espada, they'll do it beginning tomorrow.
You know, we've talked to you in the past about, you know, the people being critical of Joe and putting Yordan in the two hole and things like that. I was curious your thoughts on the follow-up move when he moved Bregman up. Bregman's been scuffling most of the year as well, contract year, got questions, got a little snippy yesterday. Your thoughts on moving him up in the lineup?
Yeah, I don't know what – he's tried everything with those top four. Obviously, Altuve's been his leadoff hitter, but he's gone Tucker – he's gone Alvarez, Tucker, Bregman, and he's gone – Alvarez, Bregman, Tucker, and now he's trying Bregman on top of those two lefties. To me, the two lefties have to be somewhere in your top four. That's obvious. Whether they go back to back or two or four or whatever. So you're looking at guys that that could be candidates that could hit in that top four if you're thinking you need to move Bregman out of there. And, you know, frankly, I'd like to see Yiner Diaz and Jeremy Pena do it over a longer stretch if they are going to supplant Bregman in one of those top four spots in the lineup. I think Bregman, the track record's there. He's off to a slow start, nothing new. I think other than 2019 when he won AL runner-up for MVP, I think he's gotten off to a slow start every year in an Astros uniform, and he still ends up the season somewhere around 100 and 100 in RBIs and runs. It doesn't look like he's going to be on pace for anywhere near that right now, but that's been Bregman's MO in the past. So you've got to trust a guy that's been there and done it for your team for the last 7 years. I think it's a different scenario than what we're talking about with Abreu. I think Abreu, you're seeing the bat slow down a little bit at times. It's not been the same swing that we saw when he was with the White Sox. With Breggy, he keeps tinkering with that swing, and he just hasn't found any of the consistency. We saw him in spring training. He looked great. But lately, it's not been where he wants to be. So I would move him out of one of those top four or five spots just because your options aren't really guys that have been there in the trenches and done it like he has in the past.
Todd Kalish joining us on the HRNP guest line, voice of the Astros on the shin, I like to call it. Todd, I have a theory. I'm a huge baseball guy. I feel like, and I like talking batting orders and stuff, I think it's extremely overrated. Does Bregman hit second or third? Yordan second or fourth? All of these things. The Astros are one of the worst pitching staffs in baseball in terms of ERA, and we're talking about who needs to hit second and third. How much do you think batting orders really factor into the offense?
It's a factor. I do think it's a factor. I think, you know, once Joe gets to that point where he gets his lineup where he wants it and he's been tinkering, I think guys like to know that they're in a certain spot and can be expected to be in a certain spot. So, yeah, there's something that you're right, though. The pitching is what's been the biggest issue. I mean, the highest ERA in the American League, not being able to hold on to leads when they've had leads. The Astros, not that long ago, scored 25 runs over the weekend against the Rangers. They need to find that consistency on the road. This has been a team that dominated on the road last year, couldn't hit at home, and now it's flipped where they can't hit on the road. They scored, 40 runs in 13 games, so averaging just over 3 runs a game on the road, and that's not going to win you a lot of baseball games. So I've got to think this is going to be the tonic for an ailing offense on the road this year, is this two-game stretch in Mexico City. The numbers were off the charts last year when the Padres and Giants played here. The number of hits, the number of runs scored. It's going to be, you know, like going to Denver on steroids, 7,350 feet high here, elevation. It's a 300-foot fly ball could easily be a home run in this ballpark. So to your question, do lineups matter? Yes, but that's not been the biggest issue for this team.
Well, at least maybe that makes up for some of the balls that looked like they were getting out in Wrigley Field and with that wind didn't have a chance when it looked like they could have helped the Astros. I'm curious from a travel perspective, having been down there and done that, but also knowing what the effects can be. Are you throwing caution to the wind? Are you drinking the water and getting out and enjoying the food and everything? Or are you playing it close to the vest, even though it's a two-game series and you can get back quickly if you need to?
No, I checked out Mexico City earlier today. I walked around probably about, I don't know, 3 or 4 miles around the hotel, had a lunch at a local spot here. I'm not drinking the water. I'm going bottled water only, trying to stay on top of that, and even brushing my teeth using bottled water for that, which is a little weird, but just trying to be really cautious because the Yankees had issues when they came down here. The Giants and Padres had some issues when they came back, so I don't even want to take a risk of the combination of altitude here and the potential of having, you know, anything with the water that could mess you up. So I'm still going to go do my thing and see the city just because I'm not going to sit in my hotel room when I'm in a foreign country or foreign place that I may never get back to again. But I'm definitely not throwing caution to the wind.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Better to be safe than sorry. This is a dated question, so I apologize, but it's been on my mind ever since it happened, and I wasn't here last week. Did y'all ever get clarification on the Arcia home run into the Crawford boxes?
Okay, so MLB has never admitted the error, but everybody that you talk to that works in the Astros organization, especially guys in the video room and the coaching staff, feel like they've ruled that incorrectly. That it was number one, ruled incorrectly by Phil Cuzzi, the second base umpire, because you're taught as an umpire with the boundary calls for home runs that you're supposed to err on the side of saying it's in play, so you let it work, play itself out. And then if you go back and overturn it, saying it's a home run, then it's fine, then you're okay that way. You're never supposed to, as an umpire, rule it a home run if there's any, like, a scintilla of doubt in your mind that it cleared the wall. So he, in his mind, saw clearly that it went over the wall. I did not like the timing on the review. It was like a minute. I don't think they looked at every relevant angle. TBS was doing the game nationally that day, and they had a clear angle that was not available to our broadcast, and their clear angle after the game showed that the ball clearly hit the yellow line that was on the side of the Crawford boxes and came directly back into play to Jake Meyer. So Arcia ended up with a home run when it should have been ruled a double correctly.
Yeah, I remember watching that play. I was like, that's not a home run. And then for some reason, I was watching you guys on mute that night. I think I was doing a baseball game, actually. So I was watching in the corner of my eye. Like, that's not a home run. And then I heard y'all talk about it later afterwards. I never understood how it was a homer. And it makes me feel better that it shouldn't have been a homer. So I appreciate you clarifying.
No, and I should have stuck to my guns, too, because I think I said originally that's not a home run. I was pretty emphatic about it. And then we got some conflicting information as the night went on about what that actual ground rule was.
Yeah.
And we got some inaccurate information. So, yeah. We tried to clarify it the next day, but that was definitely an incorrect call by the umpiring crew and by the replay officials back in New York.
Yeah, it's tough in the moment for you, though, because you have 100 people in your ear. TK, we appreciate the time. Appreciate the time. Enjoy Mexico City. Hope you come back well and not sick.
I hope so, and I hope we come back with a couple of W's.
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Todd Kalas, the voice of the Houston Astros on the Shin, joining us. Our conversation presented by Texas Star Grill Shop and Gulf Coast Chevy, Buick, GMC, and Angleton. Start shopping for your new vehicle at LanceZCars.com. How much time is really left for the Astros to save this season? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Please stand by. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Astros are 6.5 games back. 6.5. They're 12 games below 500. The worst record they've had since 2014.
Ooh.
It's not been good. 7-19, worst start. I think they had a better start in 14, actually. I think the worst start predates that. But anyways, Astros will play two in Mexico City. Ronel Blanco Saturday, and then Framber Valdez returning after doing what to his elbow? What did he do to his elbow? I think he banged his elbow. We'll never be told that. But he's pitching on Sunday. The question here is, Blankers, and 713-780-3776 to the Hive, how much time, because it's early. It's early, but you're 7-19. Mm-hmm. How much time is really left for the Astros to salvage this season?
Plenty. I just feel like I can't get off the hell-bent notion that they're gonna straighten this out. They're going to be fine. That, you know, I know TK mentioned that, you know, Fangraphs or whoever had it at about a 45% chance right now for playoffs. I just see that number going up. You know that the help is on the way. You know that you're getting Framber back already this weekend. Javier, because it was just, you know, his neck and not something with his shoulder or his arm, that he should be back. And once you start getting some of the pitching woes fixed, now you just got to focus on doing what needs to be done with that offensive lineup. I know it's like a broken record, but there's just too much damn talent on this roster. I just can't fathom a notion that they're done this early in the season. I think that with what we talked about earlier this week on the show, too, about when they were five games out or more to the Rangers in July, that you still had a chance. You ended up winning the division. I'm not ready to even think about the season being a wash and being over until the end of July.
Yeah, they really don't have to go on this amazing run yet. Like, they need to have one, but it doesn't have to be right now. Now, they have to tread water for a while. Like, they can't let this division get, you know, too far out of reach. Because you start talking double digits, it's mm-hmm. like, okay, now we're talking about some issues. So if you want to be an optimist about it, like, you have to look at how many games back you are and not how many games under 500
right.
you are. Because you go back to last year, the Astros were 6.5 games back on June 23rd. So, like, that's 2 months in the future from right now. April 26th, fast forward a month. May 26th, fast forward a month. It's June 26th. So 2 months ahead of where you currently are, you were 6.5 games back last year. So the lead in the division isn't really the issue. Like, there's plenty of time to catch the 6.5 games back. You did it last year whenever it was June 23rd. The issue more is you got to start playing some good ball. So you don't need to do all of this at once. It doesn't have to be, oh, by the end of May, you're within two games in the division. No, it's kind of tread water for a little bit. Cut 6.5 down to 4. Cut 4 down to 3. Cut 3 down to 1. And then try to put yourself in a position final month of the year where you're within striking distance. So right now you're just trying to survive.
Yep.
Like, you're just trying to survive, and the way that you're playing right now hasn't been great on the survival front. The optimism that I have, because I tend to agree with you, I think this roster is good. I think that it's too good to not be in the race and, quite frankly, to not be a playoff team. There is some optimism in my mind on the horizon. And TK mentioned some of it. You're going to go with a four-man rotation for a little while because of all the off days, and then you're going to add that fifth guy. Hopefully, by the time you have to add the fifth guy, hopefully it's Christian Javier. Like, you're about to run out of rotation of Justin Verlander, Framber Valdez, Christian Javier, Ronel Blanco, who's been fantastic. The fifth guy is still up in the air because no one's really taken that job and has won it. Arrigetti hasn't. Hunter Brown certainly hasn't. J.P. France is going to be starting games for the Spacers, so he hasn't. But that four-man rotation is pretty nasty. You go Verlander, Framber, Javi, Ronel Blanco, you should be able to start winning some games in a hurry. So I'm probably more optimistic than a lot of people with a 7-19 record, but I see some positive signs, pitching getting healthier, the offense, while they haven't scored runs, they've actually hit it okay. I think they're going to be all right.
You look at it and you say, and I'm totally with you, being 10 games out in the division is way different than chasing being double digits down in 500. I just think that that's going to level it off. You're too good of a baseball team to not be under 500. But if you were 10 games down in the division, now I would be seriously concerned already that you're digging yourself way too big of a hole. Yes, there's still time to dig out of that, but that would be more concerning than where they are right now. The Rangers have done you solid. They haven't played great baseball since they got to Minute Maid Park a few weeks back, and the door is still wide open for you to get back in it. And like you said, do it in increments where, yeah, initially I was saying, well, by May 1st, I think they're going to be in first place. Well, that's obviously out the window, but by May 1st, if you've got it down to a reasonable number, and even still at 6.5, it's not outrageous, but if you get it down to 3 or 2 or in that realm, there's nothing that says with the guys you get coming back that you can't be right back in this thing, because starting pitching has meant so much to this team. They just look snake bit. Someone needs to kick him in the ass or motivate him, and I think that's what got to some of the discussion that we had yesterday when we were clamoring for, if a spot is going to get thrown out, go nuts, go crazy, throw a base, throw your hat, do something, and show your team some fire, because of the fact that it just seems to be lacking, whether it's players in the past that have been able to kind of, you know, get guys fired up, and even if it's just creating more of a lighthearted clubhouse, too, where there's a lot more fun going on. Everybody looks like they're pressing. Everybody looks like the minute that first inning hits and they get hammered in the first inning and they're down 3 or 5, that the night is over. And this is a team that's always had too much fight that needs maybe a flame lit under their tush.
They need to see if Mark Grace would be interested in being the interim bench coach during the trip in Mexico City, because that would be the place to do it. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Let's go out there. Andy in Cypress, you're in the Hive with the Bees. Hello, Andy.
Yeah, that grenade theory, somebody may have to go fight on do it on the other side, if you know what I mean, as bad as they've been playing. Hey, look, you know, I keep hearing this little lack of leadership and blah, blah, blah. If these guys need somebody to lead them, they don't need to be in the Major League Baseball team. These guys are not hitting. There's two things. They're not hitting with runners in scoring position, and their pitching staff sucks. That's all there is to it.
But, Andy, does it suck because they're bad, or does it suck because they're depleted with injuries, the pitching staff?
Well, yes, they're depleted, but they still – look at their ERA. It doesn't matter how depleted you are. Look at the ERA. Last time I looked, they were number 30 in the league in ERA. It may be down since I've looked, but that's pathetic. The 18 games scored less than 4 runs or less. The opponents against them, 9 games, 4 or less. They're just not producing. They're not hitting. And I don't see it get any better, to be honest with you. Here's the reason, because I have no faith in Espada. That crap he pulled last night. You know what? I watched the game last weekend at my sports bar, and I was watching all these bad calls by the umpire. Yeah. Hell, I would, if I'm the head coach, I could get thrown out every game getting pissed off at all the missed calls on strikes and balls. Hell, he could have started yammering in the second or third inning, and by the fourth inning, his butt could have been tossed out, and he could have been fully righteous anger, going ballistic like a Tasmanian devil, if that's what you guys need of him. But that was a pathetic attempt last night.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Andy. Oh, go ahead.
Breckman needs to be batting ninth. You know why? Because he's ninth of slugging on the team. If you take Abreu away, because, you know, God, we can't count him for anything. If you take him away, he's ninth of slugging. He's ninth in OPS. He's ninth in no base percentage. He's ninth in average, and he's eighth in RBIs, only one more than Catarina, who has like 50-something less at bat.
I appreciate it.
I appreciate the fire, Andy. I love the fire.
So this is what gets me. He gets rewarded. He gets put in the second hole, so he has protection behind him.
Yeah.
That's pathetic. You need to shame him and put him in batting ninth.
Appreciate it, Andy. Call back anytime. I love that call.
Brought to you by
it.
Andy.
I love that call from Andy. I'm okay with Bregman batting second. Like I get your point, and if it was Game 7 of the World Series, I'm with you. I would agree with you, Andy. But right now, you got to get him going. This team's not good if Alex Bregman's not good. You have to figure out how to make him good. This is the best chance to make him good. And he does have 3 hits since he's been batting second. Now, hadn't really been hitting the ball that hard. As far as the Espada thing, this is going to this feels weird. This feels awkward. I really don't want to say this, but I thought it, and I don't have a filter. I want Joe Espada to be a little bit more like Aaron Boone, because I agree with Andy. Like, Joe Espada got thrown out for arguing balls and strikes. It looked like he got thrown out for asking the umpire if he could take his daughter to prom. Like, that was the worst ball and strike ejection I've ever seen. So I agree. Like, what do we see from what do we see all the time from Boone whenever he's upset with balls and strike? He loses his mind. He goes nuts. Like, we joked with the ejection the other day when the umpire said, "Hey, cut it out. Don't say anything else." And then he didn't say anything else. A fan did. And he got run. Why do you think that? Because he talks all the time. He has a reputation. Like, that is something that I wanted to see. Like, if you're going to lose your mind on balls and strikes, Espada said after, "Well, I didn't like his strike zone. I disagree with his strike zone." Well, let him know that you don't agree with his strike zone. TK said the home plate umpire was the one that initiated the confrontation. You kidding me? If you're a manager and your team is reeling and you're 12 games under 500 and nothing is going right, and you're not happy with the home plate ball and strike zone, then you need to make that umpire know about it. You need to be the one that starts the confrontation, not the home plate umpire. I 100% agree with Andy on that
front. Oh, for sure. You and I were talking about it, and we had, like you said, we had the sound down at Spanish Flowers yesterday watching it, and we were trying to figure out what he got tossed for. The fact that TK had to tell us the day after he got tossed for arguing balls and strikes, and it looked like the fact that he was so worried about anybody figuring out anything he was saying, he had his hand over his mouth the entire time, too. And you're watching it going, just give us some fire. Give it, like, to your point on Boone, I was thinking the same thing. When you're thinking about a guy that's going to get tossed out, Aaron Boone's going to go out there with a bat, and he's not going to hit anybody. He's going to go out there and he's going to start drawing lines in the batter's box going, these are where the balls are crossing. You are calling strikes. They're not even close to home plate. He's going to be demonstrative. He's going to be vocal, and he's going to be adamant. And that's what you need sometimes. Right, wrong, or indifferent, you need a guy that's going to show that he's got his team's back, that he's not going to tolerate a guy that's not doing his job correctly, and that he's going to pounce on an umpire and give him a piece of his mind when you realize that he's hurting his team. But the way he went about it like a librarian and then did the whole cover the mouth thing because I don't want anybody to know what I'm saying and then just kind of sauntered back in the dugout and that was it, was weak sauce.
And that's a moment, too, where you're trying to fire up the team. Yep. Like, even if you don't really disagree with the strike zone, which I believe that he did, but even if you don't, like, there's moments where you're trying to get the dugout some reason for fire, and you fake that argument to create the fire out of the dugout, and it was this little passive, he didn't even start the confrontation, the home plate umpire did, hey, you know, I don't really like your strike zone, I don't like the way that you're calling it, you're out of here. It was passive. He was on his heels. There was no fire. There was no energy. That really bothered me. Act like Boone. Go out there. Our guys are savages. Like, have that fire, man. Like, teams take on the attitude of their manager and their head coach. Like, I agree with Andy that, like, teams and players, they don't need, like, this motivation from the dugout and other players to be driven. Like, it's kind of silly. Like, I don't need somebody to lead me to motivation. I wake up every morning to have, like, you know, do my job and to be motivated to do my job. I don't have Carlos Correa visiting me in the, you know, in the morning whenever I'm having coffee, be like, you got to be your best today. No, I don't need that because I'm a grown-up. I'm an adult. I can handle that on my own. But teams oftentimes take on the attitude of their head coach and their manager. I think that could be going on right now.
Dusty didn't get tossed maybe enough for a lot of people. We would question a lot of times where he hadn't been tossed.
Yeah,
but at the same time, but he still would jaw. He still would be jawing with umpires. And look at it, it also kind of trickled down to his coaches. Cintron was a fiery guy. Cintron maybe went too far with the confrontation with the A's that got him suspended. But at the same time, he wasn't afraid of an ejection. He wasn't afraid of getting tossed. You don't know, but to your point about if you're taking on the personality of your manager, if that's changed. Because there were coaches in the NBA that said their coaches couldn't say a thing, couldn't get a technical, weren't allowed to speak up, and they were adamant about it. And other coaches that encouraged it, saying, if you're fired up about something or you see something I don't, go ahead, have at it. And then that's the kind of fire that you like to see across your coaching staff. We haven't seen it with any of our coaches this year.
Yeah, I don't think that Espada has told the coaching staff to pipe down. Alex Cintron's not going to pipe down for anybody.
But I'm saying, you, like, to your point, you take on the personality of your manager. If he's not the guy kind of doing what Dusty did, guys are going to be less likely to start being the first guy jawing at an umpire.
Yeah, to your point, like, Dusty wouldn't blow up. Like, other than that game 5 in Arlington, whenever he lost his mind, rightfully so, on that stupid call, Abreu to Adolis Garcia. That's the only time we saw him lose his mind a lot. He would get ejected maybe once a year. But he would chirp. He would chirp from that dugout, and you don't really even see a spotted chirp. And, like, to Andy's point, like, if you're not happy with the strike zone throughout the whole game, why aren't you chirping from first pitch, man? Aaron Boone's chirping from the first, and I can't stand Aaron Boone. I think Aaron Boone a lot of times is childish, but would I rather have Aaron Boone childish antics backing up his guys or Joe Espada walking to the home plate umpire on his heels and passively getting thrown out of a game? Give me Aaron Boone. Sorry, it feels disgusting for me to say that because I don't like Aaron Boone. It feels disgusting for me to say that. Give me Aaron Boone's antics over that weak sauce we saw from Joe Espada yesterday.
Agreed, 100%.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Who said it? I think we have a winning streak going. I don't know what y'all did last week, but Blankers and I, 2-0 last time the band has been together.
No, that's not
Jeremy, I'll fill you in. It was
Are Blankers and I not?
No, you and I are good. Bush League Brian in there pulled a fast one last week.
Last week, throw it out.
Anytime he loses, it's Bush League. Anytime.
We've won two in a row, I think. Haven't we won two in a row?
I think that might be right.
Yeah, we won two in a row.
You won one in a row together, but this last week. I gave Joel a special partner since you were out.
He gave it to me. He didn't give me a choice. He gave it to me.
Because it was supposed to be a surprise. Brendan Riley returned to the show to help Joel out, but I told Joel, it's your final decision on all these. And he went 1-4.
Jeremy, what are you going to do? It's like your dilemma in the coffee shop with someone trying to get your charger when you're a nice guy. I mean, all of a sudden he goes, "Hey, we're ready for Who Said It next," and we come back from break and he goes, "Got a surprise for you." I mean, you don't have to take him, but Brendan Riley's the line.
No, I didn't say you didn't have to take him. I said it was your final call for who it was on the.
No, you said you don't have to play with him if you don't want to. I'm like, well, I'm going to shut him down now.
Never said.
Why would you listen to him though? Why would you listen to any advice he gives you?
Try to be a good teammate, man.
Yeah. So Blankers and I, when we've been together, though, we've won two in a row. We go for three in a row next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, another word from my good friends at X-Golf. Chris had this idea. He got hooked up with X-Golf. He brought it to Katie, and boy, am I glad he did. And if you're a golfer with all the courses in that area, and even if you're not in that area, you want the best golf simulators in Houston, you need to get to X-Golf Katie. The weather looks like it's going to be dicey this weekend. Maybe your tee time gets washed out. Maybe you want to hit some balls tonight or at night on the weekends. Well, guess what? It's like a sports bar, too, with great food and drink, tons of TVs, and an unbelievable sporting environment. You can go there. They're open late, so the simulators are, too. You can hit balls. You can play golf. You can hit your shots just like you're hitting them on the course. In fact, you can play up to 50 courses worldwide that are real courses with the exact layouts. And the putting is accurate. The chipping is accurate. And every shot with the shot tracker will give you distance, direction, spin, and you can start calculating and dialing in each of your irons and woods to figure out just how far you hit them on an average basis. It's phenomenal. You go there once and you're a golf fan, you're going to be there again and again just to hone in on your game. If you're going there and you realize it's also an unbelievable sports bar, the environment alone will draw you to that place again and again. Check them out today. Go online. Check out X-Golf Katie right now.
ESPN 97.5. It's now time for super producer Brian McDonald, a.k.a. TreeMac.
I'm Groot.
To do his best to stump Joel and Jeremy.
Well, I'm stumped.
It's everyone's favorite segment.
Because everyone loves it.
Yeah, everyone loves it.
I know.
Right, exactly.
Yes. Yes.
Who said it?
He said it.
With the Killer Bees.
All right, Blankers and I have won three straight. Who said it? We go for four in a row today.
The numbers keep getting better. I love it.
Blankers and I have won four in a row. We look for our fifth straight victory today as we go toe-to-toe with TreeMac. All right, so Brian's going to read us quotes said by ESPN 975 personalities, five questions. We try to get three right. If we do, we win. All right, what is number one here, Brian?
Well, I just hope I can keep you from the seventh win in a row. All right, quote number one. Anytime you put pepperoni in some type of dough and cheese, I mean, it's a can't miss.
Okay, Astros were in Chicago. They're talking about Chicago-style pizza. Joe's from Chicago.
Joe and Granada, both.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about Granada. Granada's been here forever. Granada's lived in Houston longer than I've lived in Houston. I've lived in Houston my entire life. Would Brian throw us off the scent, though, here? I wonder.
Yeah, we don't have, like we used to have, the people with the really, like, that don't like cheese. Like, Palillo doesn't like cheese, which was just un-American. It was crazy.
Yeah, this could be literally anybody.
I don't see Dell saying that.
Okay, cross Dell off then. Maybe not Paul either, because that's kind of, you know, that's a little heavy for Paul. A little steep dish Chicago pizza is a little heavy for Gallant. So, Maybe we could trim it down to Joe, Lance, and Paul.
I'm agreeing with
that.
I mean,
John. I mean, John, not Paul.
Right.
And because I think Brian's a trickster, I think we can eliminate the Chicago guys.
I could see that. He does like to try and guide us down the wrong path. And he keeps the straightest face, and I hate it. Because I keep seeing if he'll... I would say it's the bench, or John and Lance, as they're called again. I definitely think that, and I tend to... You know what? I'm a good teammate, and I tend to agree with you. I think he's trying to lead the witnesses in this case. He's trying to lead us.
Well, I'd rather you be right than a good teammate. I couldn't care less if you're a good teammate.
No, I think because he's been that way in the past, I'm fine with if we want to go with Lance.
All right, let's see if I'm on the roll today, if I'm on a roll. Let's go with Lance, a little heat check early.
Anytime you put pepperoni in some type of dough and cheese, you just can't miss.
Son of a gun.
I already hate you, Brian.
You know, I can see it on your face. All right, number two, let's see if you can bounce back here. Lots of porn stars named Veronica. Probably more porn stars named Veronica than real people named Veronica. No offense to porn stars. Who are real people?
Wow.
Sounds like a Paul special.
Man. I don't think it's Dell. I don't think it's Granado, because Wendy would have his ass probably.
Yeah, I don't think Lance would do this
I don't
either.
Think Lance would do it either, because his daughter is so hyper-religious that Madi would probably be very upset with her dad.
Was he in a hotel this week, too?
Yes, in Los Angeles.
So I think he'd be fearful of somebody hearing him talk like this.
Okay.
While he's in a hotel. Maybe, I think he'd be more, I don't think he would do it. I think he'd be more likely to do it in a studio than on the road. Because those walls are thin.
Would Joe?
He's rubbing elbows with all the people that he works with. No, I don't, I think this is Paul, man.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that this is Paul.
Yeah, I think as the single guy that's very, very open about how he spends his time away from work, I could see Paulie saying it.
Yeah, let's go with Paulie.
Lots of porn stars named Veronica.
Yeah, that was...
Yeah?
Probably more porn stars named Veronica than real people named Veronica.
Do you know a Veronica?
Do I?
Yeah. Real people named Veronica. I'm not trying to tell you.
I feel like I went to elementary school with a Veronica.
I don't know that I've ever known
a Veronica.
Did she
end up in porn?
I wouldn't know.
I don't know that I've ever known a Veronica.
Yeah, I think I went to elementary with a Veronica.
I don't think I've known anyone named Veronica either. I think Paul might be onto something.
Maybe.
All right.
I feel like I maybe went to middle school with a Veronica too, but it might have been the same one. I don't remember.
I want to say that Elvis Costello had a song named Veronica. Other than that, I don't know.
You got me there.
Elvis Costello. Wasn't he the guy who did the Who's On First? Kidding. All right.
You
triggered the joke.
There's someone listening in their 70s that's very triggered by that joke. All right, number three, 1-1 right now. I was playing around with Tankathon. I got the Rockets to get the number one pick from Brooklyn. Yeah, it's possible. You never know. The NBA is rigged, okay? And they might say that, you know, we want Jalen Green and Alperen Şengün to get some more new teammates.
First blush to me is Dell or Joe.
Yeah, that's my first blush is Joe. I don't think Dell's nerdy enough to play on Tankathon.
He might be.
I don't know. I don't think Dell would waste his time
Dell's
playing
a
on
Heat fan.
But would Dell wait? Yeah, so they're not in the lottery.
Right.
Would Dell waste his time playing on a computer generator?
Dell
I don't
would
think
for
so.
Sure. You're right.
I think I don't think Paul would waste his time doing that, and I don't think that John and Lance would do this.
Joe as a child yet finds a way to stay up till 3 a.m. playing video games.
And it's this week, too. It's weird they're talking Rockets this week. Like, what are they talking about the Rockets for this week?
That's a good point.
Like, why in the world are they talking Rockets this week?
I guess because the NBA playoffs and the wish that the Rockets were playing.
I would say that the second person that talks more about basketball, it might be Dell. Like, more than you would either be Dell or Joe. My gut is Joe here.
I don't feel like I'd do it that much, but okay.
Maybe more willingness. Maybe not actually does it, but maybe more like a willingness to be. Yeah. I think you're right, actually. I'll take that back. I'll recant and say willingness to talk basketball.
Yeah. I think I like it. I like Joe.
Okay, let's do it.
I was playing around with Tankathon.
Tankathon was a good
way there. I got the Rockets to get the number one pick from Brooklyn.
there's not many people that have Tankathon in their bag, quite frankly.
Yeah, in hindsight, that probably was an easy one. The Tankathon, I think, gave it a right way right away.
I'm not going to say it again, but Brian gave away one last week with one that he did that is a true Joe-ism that I'm keeping in my back pocket.
Yeah, okay, that's true. Yeah,
don't keep your knowledge to yourself on Alan Blanchard. Yes. So what's the score here?
Up 2-1. You're up 2-1. Going to question number four, or quote number four.
I'm the worst at keeping score. Like, when I used to play pickup basketball, I would forget the score every single point.
Well, I mean, you just proved – I mean, you also kept score back on the right side of it that we're about to win six in a row.
No, it's eight in a row. Oh,
I have the worst short-term
memory. Yeah, no, he's miscounting. You guys have won eight in a row. All right, quote number four. The toilets can determine if you're healthy or not based off of your urine. It would be terrible, though, if you're going to the bathroom – and it's like, you have cancer.
What?
Toilets can determine your health? Could this
sounds
be
like news of the weird.
News of the weird, yes. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Can you repeat this?
Sure. The toilets can determine if you're healthy or not, based off of your urine. It would be terrible, though, if you're going to the bathroom, and it's like, you have cancer.
My...
John?
Gut feels Lance.
That's great. We go but easy. Here we go again with show divided.
But is this Lance reacting to John reading the story, or is this John reading the story?
John normally reads the stories. And Lance is in L.A., so I don't think there's any chance Lance is reading the story.
This
one more time,
be...
Brian, please.
Sure. The toilets can determine if you're healthy or not, based off of your urine. It would be terrible, though, if you're going to the bathroom and it's like, you have cancer.
This could be Killer G's, too, though, like in their little garbage time.
See, what screws me up is I can hear Dell saying it the way he read it.
I don't think he would go there, though.
He hasn't gone there yet.
Can you read it again?
An unprecedented fourth read, all right. The toilets can determine if you're healthy or not, based off of your urine. It would be terrible, though, if you're going to the bathroom and it's like, you have cancer.
Now I hear everybody. I can hear Paul saying it, Dell saying it.
That Caden sounds like Joe to me. Like, just the way he has his sitting structures. I think that's Joe.
Oh, man. Yeah.
I think it's Joe.
I could hear Dell saying it. I could almost hear Paulie saying it. Okay, let's go, Joe. The toilets can determine if you're healthy or not based off your urine. It would be terrible, though, if you're going to the bathroom and it's like, you have cancer.
Yeah. All right.
Another one, right, Joe?
2-2. Yeah, you were right there. You were right there at the end. I felt good at first when you went to John and Lance, but then you kind of self-corrected.
At the very end, too.
And
I was like, how did it sound?
Yeah. All right, 2-2, go into the fifth question, and this is the money one. Here we go, quote number five. This is how you end up with a daughter named Reba Jr. You're going to end up hooking up with some other Southerner down there, and you're going to name her after some country stars, Dolly Reba.
This sounds like a Dell condescending take. Like, you Southerners? Like,
what's the topic?
I don't know. It sounds like country western music.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see Lance saying it.
Yeah, I have no idea. My gut feels
dead. One more time, Brian,
please. I missed my gut feel last time.
All right, sure. This is how you end up with a daughter named Reba Jr. You're going to end up hooking up with some other Southerner down there, and you're going to name her after some country stars? Dolly Reba?
Dell, final answer.
Dang, okay.
Jeremy, you agree, or?
Yeah, I support my teammate.
This is how you end up with a daughter named Reba Jr.
He used three balls. Did he go three balls?
He's laughing right now. He's so happy with himself.
You're going to name her after some country stars.
Did he go three balls today?
I did.
What was the top? What?
Sheesh.
Sorry?
What was the context behind that?
It was some NASCAR race. They were talking about people going and, like, camping out in the infield. I don't remember the exact the exact full story. But there's some context to this that Joel might remember. When we had Brendan Riley on last week, he was criticizing me for not having enough Paul. So I decided,
because he admitted his love for Paul.
So right. This week I gave us lots of Paul.
Was that Bush League of Brian to use three Pauls?
Yep,
I think it was. 713-780-3776.
Well, we got a chance to go 8 out of 9 next week.
Unreal. That was Bush
Winners
League.
Win.
They cheat a little bit, too. All right, J.P. France, sent down. Surprising to you, surprising to me, but I think it does tell us what the Astros think of Jonathan Patrick France. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Did it surprise you that the name that is being sent down is J.P. France? Not out of the rotation, but just sent down. Is it a surprise to you that it's J.P. France that will be the guy demoted when Framber Valdez is officially activated?
It didn't to me when we had the conversation. I was pretty adamant about the fact I still thought Hunter Brown's stuff was better than J.P. France. And maybe the overall message that's being sent is that they don't trust him in a short relief stint, so that if he's either going to be a starter or nothing else, so he might as well continue to start down in Sugar Land, so that if they need a spot starter, he would be the guy. It didn't surprise me simply because of the fact that his stuff just hasn't looked great this year, and hitters have been all over it.
So it wasn't surprising to you that it wasn't Arrigetti or Sean Dubin?
I'm in the minority on Dubin. I really like the fact that, for the most part, I like Dubin's fastball. I liked a lot of his stuff. I think that he can get guys out. I could see Arrigetti, but no, to me, we talked about this in the offseason, and you were adamant about using him as trade bait. I think that once there was enough tape on him and the league saw him enough that he didn't have like plus pitches or a pitch or two that I thought was going to translate to long-term success in the bigs as a starting pitcher. So I'm fine with sending him down.
No, it's not a matter of fine. It's more surprise, because I agree with you that I'm not a J.P. France mark. Right. I don't think he's very good either. And like you said, I would have traded him in the offseason. I was stunned that J.P. France got demoted, not necessarily kicked out of the rotation, but the guy demoted to the minors. I thought for sure that would – and I agree with you about Dubin. Like, you can make a case Sean Dubin over J.P. France. He's more established in the bullpen. He can give you 2-3 innings there, pitch really well in his last outing. I hear you on Dubin.
Mm-hmm.
I was really surprised that it wasn't Arrigetti that got sent down. And I echo what TK said whenever he joined us. I was stunned that it was J.P. France that went down, not Spencer Arrigetti. Because even if you're looking at them as like equals, like they're on the same tier, well, J.P. France pitched the day before Spencer Arrigetti, so he would be available sooner to pitch out of the bullpen between those two. I think that this is a huge tell on what the Astros think of J.P. France relative to, notably, Spencer Arrigetti and Hunter Brown. Because, okay, if you want to throw Sean Dubin out of the conversation because he's more situated and like stable in relief pitcher mm-hmm. life, okay, like that's a fair point. I think it's a good point. You have three other pitchers that were on the chopping block: Hunter Brown, Spencer Arrigetti, and J.P. France. The fact that it was France tells you, well, they believe in Hunter Brown's stuff more than J.P. France, which is obvious. He has better stuff. But it also shows you that they think higher of Spencer Arrigetti than J.P. France.
Yeah.
Because if J.P. France is behind both of those guys and you're taking inventory on every single starter that you have, including guys that have injuries, you're talking about four guys there. Hunter Brown's 5, Spencer Arrigetti's 6. Jose Urquidy would be 7. Lance McCullers and Luis Garcia would be 8-9. You're sending the message by making that move yesterday that J.P. France is number 10 on your starting pitcher depth chart.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that when you look at it, what it does say is both long-term and short-term, they have way more invested in and way more belief in that both Brown and Arrigetti are guys that they're going to count on this year and in the future as bigger portions of this team than J.P. France. He's expendable in a lot of ways. And maybe it is that, you know, they're worried about, too, that if you send him to the bullpen, that, you know, it's an adjustment and his prep time and his routine has changed and all those things, as opposed to a Dubin. But I think that of the three guys not named Dubin, when you talk about him and the other two guys, they believe in the futures. Dana Brown said before the season, and Eric Geddy, and we all know for the last couple of years, Hunter Brown has been labeled the future or one of the future starters of this team, that they basically sent the message loud and clear that he ain't it for the long term for this team and probably not for the short term.
And maybe Ronel Blanco jumped him this year. Like maybe maybe J.P. France was higher on their starting pitcher depth chart than Ronel Blanco, but because of the first month, Blanco's been great. J.P. France has been the opposite of great. Maybe it's Blanco that jumped France. But what frustrates me here is even then, J.P. France is your ninth starter in the organization. Why are you hanging on to a 28-year-old starter who is going to be at his absolute highest trade value during the offseason? And it frustrates me because, again, I look at all the moves that the general manager and the front office have made since they moved on from James Click, and this is one that really sticks in my craw because it's like you're making the decision right now that you don't believe in J.P. France. Why didn't you make this decision in the offseason, getting a little creative on the trade value that J.P. France still had available?
Evidently, they believed the back of the baseball card from just that half a season where he had good numbers and he was competing with
pitches. I don't think you can say that, though, because he wouldn't be the guy sent down.
But at the start of the year, well, I think that's what I said. It flipped. I think it really did flip 180. At the start of the year, I didn't think Ronel Blanco was going to have a spot on this team anywhere at all as a starter, and maybe early in the season just as a spot starter for one or two starts until J.V. got back and you didn't know that Fromber was going to get hurt or Javier. And I thought that if he was going to have any role on the major league team, he was just going to be a one-inning guy out of the bullpen that they were going to kind of transition to get into that role. And now a couple starts in with how he has just taken in the league by storm in the early going, and because the team has struggled as well, it's a complete flip where whether he had long-term stuff for the major leagues as a starting pitcher or not, J.P. France did enough at the end of from the minute he got to the big leagues a year ago to look like he was a capable pitcher for your rotation this year. We were looking at him at the 4-5 spot in the rotation, depending on who was still hurt. But in a short period of time, Blanco proved to get major league guys out, throw a no-hitter, you know, continue a streak of scoreless baseball, you know, be one of the top 10 pitchers in baseball over his first couple of starts, and J.P. France got beat up all over the yard. So then it comes down to how much are you believing in and trusting in and needing this guy in the future? Well, you know that they have a lot invested in Hunter Brown. They believe in him a lot. And evidently they believe a whole lot more in Eric Geddy than maybe even Dana Brown was letting on in the offseason.
But why? What has changed with those last two? Because I agree with you on the Blanco front, but what has changed with Hunter Brown? Like, at what point did they start to have more belief in Hunter Brown and Spencer Eric Geddy than J.P. France? I think that they always have. I don't think that they have in the last week. I think that they've always thought higher of Hunter Brown, and they've always thought higher of Spencer Eric Geddy. My point is, if you've thought higher of Hunter Brown and Spencer Eric Geddy than J.P. France for the last 6 months and into the offseason, he should have been traded.
Oh, I agree. But I also think, Jeremy, on the Hunter Brown point, I completely agree with you. Like we both know his stuff has been too good and they've thought too highly of him. They're not going to just completely turn their back on him. I think from the Eric Geddy standpoint, based on his rocky first start, too, they had to see that he, on the big league level, that he was going to be able to kind of settle in and get major league guys out. And the key telltale sign was his last start when he did get touched up for a home run in the first inning, but then he settled in and started mowing guys down and started striking guys out. And
so did J.P. France, though. Like, it's the same story. It's the same story for both guys.
I think the stuff and the way he went about getting strikeouts and everything, I think Eric Geddy impressed them a whole lot more than what J.P. France did to stay relevant in that game that he was in.
I mean, France had 6 strikeouts in 5 innings. Spencer Eric Geddy had 5 strikeouts in 5 innings. Like, I mean, my point, and I'm not saying that J.P. France is better than Spencer Eric Geddy. Like, I'm not. I think Spencer Eric Geddy's stuff's better. I would rather have Spencer Eric Geddy on the big league club than J.P. France. My point is, I don't think anything has changed that has made their opinion change. I think their opinion between those two guys has been the same since it was last December. I think they screwed up in not trading J.P. France. If you knew all along, because J.P. France actually has better numbers than Spencer Arrighetti. They're both awful, but J.P. France's are actually better. J.P. France, 7.46 ERA. Spencer Arrighetti's 10.97. J.P. France's whip, 1.697. Spencer Arrighetti's whip, 2.344. So, like, they're both awful. J.P. France's awfulness is less awful than Spencer Arrighetti. Why did they choose Arrighetti over J.P. France? I agree with you. They like him more. But it's not the production as with them as big league pitchers in 2024 isn't the determining factor. The determining factor is they've always thought higher of Spencer Arrighetti, and if they've always thought higher of Spencer Arrighetti, they should have traded J.P. France.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't disagree with you and you brought it up in the offseason. I think you're right. They should have traded him. But now that they haven't, what are you left with? Right? Because now
you're doomed.
Yeah, you're not going to do what we've been talking about when people call in and text in and say, trade Bregman and trade this guy and trade that. You're not going to be in a situation where we're going to see this team just completely sell out now and expect to get anything at all from J.P. France, because the rest of the league sees what we see. And we know that his fastball isn't busting people down. So, yeah, I mean, you basically are eating it now.
Yeah, you might be able to, like, trade him at the deadline, but it's going to be for pennies on the dollars of what it could have been in the offseason. You could have gotten far more. Like, 7.560, Dubon has so much movement on his pitches. I can't wait to see him mature. France is good, maybe trade bait. He was in December. He's no longer good trade bait. Now he's a throw-in with a guy that somebody else is trying to get rid of. They screwed up.
He's Joe Smithy,
loss.
Right?
Yeah.
He's like a guy. You weren't going to DFA him, per se, but he's a guy, or a Montero when you got Montero from Seattle.
With options. Like, with options.
Right. Right, yeah. Where he's in order for him to have any value at all, he's got to go down to Sugarland and get right and prove that at least as a 4A pitcher, he's good. And then he's going to have a start or two or an appearance or two up in the big league where he proves he can get major league hitters out again.
Yeah, this is another L for the front office. 713-780-ESPN. Earlier, the Killer G's, they eulogized the Houston Astros, and they did it all wrong. We're going to pick up where they left off. It's the Killer B's on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.